Chapter 10. As Sen diligently practiced her forgery skills in a dusty corner beneath a chunk of fake white munilinsed marble, she suspected, not for the first time, that Rudega was a bit too happy to have a slave to do his bidding. The merchant was a sly, singularly unpleasant Doug, who emitted a strange odor reminiscent of old cheese. His species had a long snout, from which dangled thin, fleshy tendrils and a squat body. More unusual was the fact that they walked on their arms and used their feet, which had long, dexterous toes, the way most other beings used their hands. He had been working with the Empire for as long as there had been one, he liked to boast.
"Got the shop cheap back towards the end of the Clone Wars," he told Sen one evening. "The former owner had been sniffed out by the Jedi for dealing in black market items. Fortunately, the Republic eventually became the Empire, and what it gained in worlds, it appeared to lose in scruples."
Then, seeming to recall exactly to whom he was speaking, he amended quickly.
"Well, at least when it comes to little things like the black market."
"Information is a useful commodity," Sen had replied. "Sometimes the Empire must get its hands a little dirty for the greater good."
She had done her research on him, of course. Rudega had been useful as far as it went. But lately his tips hadn't panned out, and some of his sources had turned up dead. So he was quickly becoming a liability. She suspected he wouldn't be terribly missed. The shop was filled, if not with actual antiques, at least with things that were certainly old, some of which smelled as bad as the merchant who sold them. There was nothing resembling station security, as there had been on Telic IV, which was officially managed by the Empire. Here, each merchant had to hire their own thugs, and Rudega was no exception. The pair of Trandoshans who guarded the Doug and his merchandise were brothers. They were ugly and crude, but while they may have made comments in their own language, which Sen understood perfectly, they did so under their breath, and they did not overtly harass her. It suited her well enough. They wouldn't be around too much longer anyway. Fursio had sent a few fake spies Rudega's way, to lend Sen's cover story some verisimilitude. He had been careful, though, to not select anyone who would recognize her. The spies accepted their data chips she gave them and dutifully carried them back to Navint. If they were foolish enough to attempt to break the code, they would receive false information. Few thought of Sen as someone with a sense of humor, but she was terribly amused by all of this. The day came at last. Sen had spent extensive hours in simulators and excelled in live-fire exercises, but her field experience was limited. She was looking forward to transitioning from the dim rooms with dozens of vidscreens to a place where she could actively participate. Things were going to be quite different, starting in approximately... She heard the sound of blaster fire and screaming. "Now," she amended. Even as she scrambled to get out of her alcove, the Doug's foot shot out and dragged her from it.
"Sen, what's going on? Is this part of your cover?"
He anxiously shifted his weight from one hand to the other. She waved him furiously to silence.
"Yes! Yes!" she hissed. "You'll be fine!"
Until this moment, her world had been one of calmness, coolness, calculation, and focus. Now her heart was beating so fast.
"This is all under control. Go and wait in your office. This will all be over in a moment. And take your Trandoshans with you. My contact is very skittish."
He grunted and hurried off to hide like the coward he was, his old cheese odor lingering in the air for a moment. One foot waved to his bodyguards, and they followed him into the office. Sen wrinkled her nose. Yes, the galaxy was going to be much better off without him. Outside, the screaming increased. Sen took a deep breath, remembering the helpless, frightened slave girl she was trying to be, and stumbled forward with such false panic she tripped on an old statuette of the Vulicarian fertility god Kukwebi. Kukwebi's stone Spear of Desire stabbed her arm. It would leave a mark. Good. She used the sting to bring tears to her eyes. She went to the front of the shop, looking around as if in wild terror, but in reality assessing the situation. They were coming down the main corridor now. There were three of them. A male Kagi, a Twi'lek female, and a human male. Sen was quite certain they knew exactly what they were doing. This group was violent and willing to sacrifice themselves if necessary, but they were far from stupid. Some of the shops they ran straight past. Others they paused and fired into. Still other shops exploded as small, blinking devices were rolled inside. Sen had to time her move just right. It was a risk. Partisans of any stripe didn't care about collateral damage to civilian population, but they were skilled. She had to trust they wouldn't fire randomly or decide to kill someone just for the hell of it. There were three shops down. Two. Now, Sen ran out of the antiquities shop, sobbing, shouting, and pointing back the way she had come. "He's hiding in the office!" Her arms were bare so they could see the bruises and the freshly made injury courtesy of Kukwebi, and the neckline of her threadbare tunic revealed a slender throat encased in a shock collar.
"Move!"
shouted the Kagi, his pale red eyes blazing and his skin the gray color of stone. He didn't slow his speed, leaping clear over her, hitting the corridor, and rolling to his feet in a staggering display of acrobatic athleticism. Sen was running out of the line of fire in a pattern that would bring her around behind the oncoming rush of dreamers. She was barely clear when they started firing, stepping in closer until they had reached the office door. If Rudega and the Tradotian guards screamed, the sound was drowned out by blaster fire. Once they were satisfied that Rudega would never send another message to the Empire, the dreamers moved on. As they turned and headed down the corridor towards their next targets, the Twi'lek, a female with rich teal coloring and striking purple eyes, paused long enough to give Sen a searching glance. Her eyes lingered on the shock collar. Then she followed her fellow rebels. And so did Sen. She raced after them, not begging them to take her, not yet. Just running with them and standing back and picking up pieces of debris to throw while the others used their blasters and their bombs. The smell of smoke and burnt flesh filled her nostrils and caused her to cough. How the human heard the sound over the cacophony, Sen didn't know. He spared her a quick, angry glance from hard eyes.
"Get lost, kid!"
he shouted. The dismissal was amusing, considering the speaker was obviously not much older than Sen.
"Take me with you!"
Sen cried.
"I hated Rudega! I hate everyone here! Please!"
They didn't reply. So she kept following, kept out of the way, and kept helping them. Finally, they seemed to have finished what they had come to do. Behind them, they left a trail of debris, fire, people wailing in fear and agony, and alarms wailing in belated, useless warning. And bodies. Lots of bodies. Sen had memorized the layout of the station down to some of the finest details, and she knew that Docking Bay 32 was up ahead. This time, instead of the dreamers creating corpses as they went, the floor in front of them was littered with the dead. Someone had cleared their retreat path. The three partisans and the human Imperial agent didn't slow, simply leaping over the bodies and continuing on. They had to be close to their vessel at this point. Again, the Twi'lek glanced at Sen, but this time she shouted, "Get over here! Hurry!" Sen hurried, sprinting towards them and moving behind the Twi'lek. The human tossed a grenade back down the corridor the way they had come. It exploded with much more power than the ones they had used previously, and the resulting pile of rubble provided an effective block against any pursuit. Sen allowed herself an elated grin. This role she was playing, this Sen the slave, surely she would be ecstatic. There were two final bodies, sprawled at the entrance of the docking area proper. The human entered a code and the door slid open. Awaiting them on the other side was a ship, a little worse for the wear, but still spaceworthy. The portal to open space had already been opened, but a faint glow of blue light indicated the presence of a magnetic field. The ship's ramp was down. Standing on it and waiting for the dreamers, as Miko had waited for Versio and Hask at Telic 4 not so long before, was a gray-furred, elderly Chadra fan. Barely a meter tall, with enormous ears and a snub-nosed muzzle set in a bat-like face, he peered, blinking shiny black eyes in shock at Sen, smaller than any of them except for himself, tagging along behind them.
Pia Kao, the Twi'lek shouted. We have to get a collar off.
Oh dear,
Pia Kao said, his ears twitching nervously.
We don't really...
Hang on.
He ducked out of sight as the partisans began to clatter up the ramp. A hand closed hard on Sen's arm, yanking her off her feet and spinning her around. It was the young human. Not you, he said. We'll try to remove the collar, but that's it. You're on your own. Sen stared at him, the horror in her eyes not entirely feigned. A firm embracer of redundancy, she'd had two different backup plans, but both were useless now that she was sealed on the wrong side of a collapsed corridor. If the Dreamers refused to take her with them, the plan would fall apart. She'd be able to get out of the station safely, of course. The Empire would see to that. But too much would be public knowledge, and the Dreamers now knew her face. The mission would be compromised. She would have to sit it out, and Sen couldn't bear that.
Please, no!
She put everything into the words.
I'm trapped here now. They'll think I helped you.
You should have stayed out of it.
The human was implacable, but even as he spoke, the Twi'lek clattered down the ramp. She carried a small tool.
She comes with us, the Twi'lek snapped.
But my mission, my rules.
The beautiful teal-skinned woman leaned down and gazed into Sen's eyes.
What kind of collar is it?
Explosive, Sen said. It'll go off if I leave the station or if it's removed improperly. Can you get it off?
The decision for Sen to wear the collar was a risk, but a slave without one would be too suspicious. It was a safe bet that the partisans, who were constantly forced to improvise, would be able to remove the collar. And if not, Sen always carried the key with her. If worse came to worst, she could claim she had stolen it but not know how to use it.
Oh, no. We are not doing this, the man said. Dana, you could kill us all.
No,
the Chandra fan insisted in his warbly, raspy voice.
That's not how this works. It will delay the explosion, but not stop it, so you'll have to hurry.
Got it, Dana said. She pressed the device to the locking mechanism on the collar.
It whirred and hummed. Then there was a soft snick, and the lock opened. Quick as a thought, the Twi'lek grabbed the collar, sprinted back to the door, opened it, and flung the collar back down the corridor. She quickly closed the door, pivoted, and raced to the ship.
Nadrine, get us out of here.
The ramp was already being retracted as Sen ran up it, dropping the now unnecessary collar key. Then it slammed shut behind her, and she was on the ship, diving for a seat and fastening the crash webbing as a fifth member of the crew, a tall human female with reddish-brown hair, was hitting buttons. Beside her, in a cockpit clearly never designed for a Chandra fan, sat Pia Kao, his tiny legs dangling as he operated a small handheld device.
Magnetic field down in 3, 2,
he counted. The ship lifted off, hovered.
1!
The glow that outlined the starfields disappeared. Faster than Sen had expected, the ship surged through the star-spotted darkness of open space. Behind them, there was an explosion from the corridor, and bright light from the portals flooded the cabin. The ship rocked, but kept going. A heartbeat later, the tiny dots that were stars turned into streaks of white as the partisans and their new ally made the jump into hyperspace. Everyone, it seemed, let out a collective breath. Then Dana spoke.
Cave, you're still new, so I'm going to cut you some slack.
The young human partisan seemed startled and glanced at Sen before opening his mouth to respond. Dana cut him off.
Never, ever question the leader of a mission. Whatever they do, if they say shoot, you shoot. If they say die, you die. And if they say take along the slave who's just fought on your side to the best of her ability, guess what? You do that too.
Are we clear?
The explosion. Are we clear?
Sen had to admit, she'd held a stereotype of Twi'lek females as soft and kind. The one taking down a now-subdued human was nothing of the sort. She was a goddess of righteous anger, fierce and yet in perfect control, and the twitching of the long, graceful leku that fell from either side of her head was ominous rather than pleasant.
Yeah, Kaeve said. We're clear.
Good. Okay. Everyone divest. They freed themselves from their crash webbing and got to their feet. All wore nondescript gray flight suits, which they began to unfasten. Sen watched in surprise. Flight suits weren't the most comfortable gear, but usually crews wore them until they reached their destinations. She became even more confused when they pushed their hands down the necks of their shirts. Sen began, and then fell silent when Dana brought something out and showed it to her. It was a small orb, similar to the explosive jewelry that Box partisans had worn at the Singularity. This one, however, and the others the two males were retrieving from beneath their clothes, wasn't painted or otherwise disguised as a clay bead. A small piece of what looked like black metal was attached to each one. Dana held out her other hand. In it was a detonator. Sen stared at the explosives, then up at Dana.
We wear them all the time when we go on a mission, the Twi'lek said quietly. In case something goes wrong, we don't want to be caught and tortured by the Empire. And sometimes we know we're on a one-way trip going in.
I see, Sen said.
She knew the partisans didn't shy away from suicide bombings. She hadn't known that every mission had the potential to become one. The Kagi gathered up the personal-sized bombs and took them back to another part of the ship for safekeeping. Dana seemed to shake off the solemnity of the divesting.
There, that's done. I don't know about the rest of you, but I always get hungry after one of these runs. Anyone else want anything?
A chorus of no's greeted her, except from Kaeve, who decided to stay sullenly silent. Dana went to the compartment in the ship's bulkhead. She removed two ration cubes, a container of nutritive milk, and a single, spiky, slightly bruised, Malarin fruit.
Go easy with that,
the Kagi said as he returned to the main cabin.
We're getting low on, well, everything.
Don't worry. Opportunity should be arriving soon, Dana replied.
It had better, and if it doesn't, the Empire won't have to worry about us. We'll have all starved to death.
We'll be fine. Even that growing boy of yours.
Dana reassured him as she helped herself to the rations and walked over to where Sen sat. Sen let her eyes flicker up, then down. Dana sat down beside Sen and handed her a cube, the milk, and the Malarin. Sen accepted the milk and cube, but shook her head at the proffered piece of fruit.
Thank you, she said, glancing at the Kagi. But this is plenty.
Dana smiled a sad, bittersweet smile. I know those words, she said. Those are the words of a slave.
Want to know how I know? Looking up at her cautiously, Sen nodded.
I was a slave myself, ever since I was an adolescent. The man who took me and half my village said how he liked how I danced.
Dana spat the word, then laughed humorlessly. He'd never seen me dance.
She looked over at Sen. You ever have to dance for your master?
When Sen shook her head, Dana nodded, looking a little relieved.
Well, thank goodness for small favors. What did you do for him?
Sen suspected the query came from a genuine place of concern, one slave to another. But by the way the others were listening now, she also knew there was a deeper layer to the question. They had just, to the best of their knowledge, risked their lives to free her and had taken her with them. They wanted to know what she might have done to help the Empire, and also could do for them. Slavers, rebels, they're all the same, she thought, and answered with what she hoped was the proper beaten-down shyness of a former slave.
I know Rudega was into some pretty bad things. Spying for whoever paid him, the black market. When he found out I knew how to read and write basic, he put me to work in his shop. I helped him with numbers, cataloging, that sort of thing.
But the actual former slave was shaking her head. Honey, it's all right. I know you did more. You had to have done more, or else he'd just hire someone and pay them starvation wages.
Sen feigned hesitation, looked around at the faces that were now turned toward her. Except for Kaeve, who was still stinging from Dana's upbraiding, they seemed more curious than suspicious.
I have a steady hand and a sharp eye, she said. He put me to work forging. Letters, documents, you know, certificates of authenticity. Things to make stolen goods seem to be legitimate. Things like that.
Now even Kaeve was looking thoughtful.
Do you know languages?
Sen shook her head.
Only basic and Huttese. My master, Rudega, wanted to make sure I couldn't eavesdrop on some of his conversations. I'm sorry.
No need to apologize. When we get to the base, we'll see just how good you are at forging, Dana said. I know you're ashamed of what you had to do, but now you can turn that skill to something worthwhile. Something that matters. Do you know who we are?
No. I just know you killed Rudega and others who were helping the Empire, so I'm guessing you're rebels?
Of a sort, Dana said. We call ourselves the Dreamers. We're what's left of the real partisans, people like Saw Gerrera. I'm sure your master must have known about us.
Sen nodded solemnly, and Dana continued.
What you saw back there. We do things like that a lot. And sometimes we do things that seem cruel, but they're necessary. I think I can arrange for you to stay with us if you'd like to. Otherwise, we can take you somewhere safe.
Sen bit her lip and looked around.
You saved me, she said. I want to repay that. I'll stay with you, if you'll have me.
Dana looked around at her crew for a minute, the tips of her leku twitching as she pondered something.
Kaeve, you should go take a look at that new tool that got us our newest recruit. Piakau, you were telling me you could use it to do the same thing on thermal detonators, right?
The Kagi, and the human, of course, could see right through the Twi'lek's request, but the Chandrafan clearly didn't.
Absolutely!
Piakau's furry face was filled with enthusiasm.
Let me show you the schematics.
All three rose and went to the front of the cabin, allowing their commander and the new recruit some privacy. Gently, Dana took Sen's hand and placed the fruit in her palm.
It was a while before I told anyone, she said quietly. I felt ashamed.
It took the mentor to show me that none of what happened to me was my fault. Maybe Rudega didn't make you dance. She indicated Sen's bare arms.
But I can see the marks.
He wasn't a gentle master.
Did you ever try to kill him?
The words and the soothing, gentle voice in which they were uttered were such a bizarre juxtaposition that Sen lifted her eyes from her plate.
No, she said.
Even though the entire story was fake, somehow these words stung. Sen was fond of this character she'd created. She didn't want Sen the slave to look like a coward.
But I wish I had.
Don't.
The Twi'lek was full of surprises.
Why not?
Sen asked.
Because that kind of killing is personal. And when it gets personal, it gets ugly. And some of that ugliness spills onto you.
She wasn't looking at Sen as she spoke. Her eyes were distant, unfocused. Sen had debriefed enough agents to know that expression. It tended to hang, like a miasma, only around those who knew from experience what they were talking about.
But isn't what you're doing personal? She inquired. Killing people, taking their lives, I mean, that seems personal to me.
It wasn't personal at all, but it seemed like the sort of thing Sen the slave would have asked.
You can't think of it like that, Dana said. You have to remember what we, and now you, too, are fighting for. We're fighting to end what happens to people like you and me. Oh, the Empire doesn't come out and endorse it officially. But I have danced a time or two for those who wore command caps. The Empire knows it happens, and they just don't care. Her lovely face was hard as she continued. They don't care about anything except themselves and that horrible, evil man who shuts himself away from everyone. They don't care about the billions whose worlds they've destroyed to get their medals or their kyber crystals or whatever the hell it is they're looking for this week. They don't care who dies or who lives. It's all for the glory of the Empire, honey, and don't you forget it. I won't, Sen said earnestly. And she wouldn't either. The treasonous words were emblazoned in her memory. Smiling at Dana, she bit into the Mailerin.